got so much to let go of. We've got stuff and stories and da-da-da-da. Letting go, I mean, that can be a practice. That can be the whole practice. As Ajahn Chah has said, let go a little, have a little peace. Let go a lot, have a lot of peace. Let go completely, have complete peace. So it can be the whole, can be the major practice is letting go. When I was, many years ago, I can remember because our son was in pre-kindergarten and James volunteered to take care of him for a week, and I went with some girlfriends on a canoeing trip on the Green River, which is just, it leaves Moab and those red arches. It's gorgeous country, sort of north of the Grand Canyon. And the Green River merges eventually with the Colorado, which goes on through the Grand Canyon. So it's a gorgeous place. And I went with a group that were followers of a woman named Peace Pilgrim. And on this trip, what we needed to do is take as little as possible with us. And then every night we would unpack, we would take food, sleeping bag, but not too much else. And we would have to carry everything up these, up to sleep. And then we would cook and everything, and then we'd get back in the canoe and keep going. And it was really a time out from life as it's normally run with all the busyness. And so, and was done by these followers of Peace Pilgrim she was the first woman in the United States to hike the Appalachian Trail by herself, which means going all the way from Florida to Maine through mountains by herself. You can't carry that much. So she was very self-reliant and resilient, and she was a pacifist during World War II, which meant that she was quite different than most people. And she ended up going across the country just hitchhiking, just wearing this sort of apron, well, wearing clothes with an apron that said Peace Pilgrim with a toothbrush, and not much else. And people would pick her up, and she would share her wisdom and in the town, and people would feed her. And she just totally relied on the benevolence of others, knowing that she had a lot to give back. So there aren't very many people who can live like that in today's society. But she was one of them who's inspired a lot of people. So just regarding accumulating things and also and your actions, accumulating, I have to do this and I have to do that. Her words of wisdom are, if your life is in harmony with your part in the life pattern, and if you are obedient to the laws which govern this universe, then your life is full and good, but not overcrowded. If it is overcrowded, you are doing more than is right for you to do, more than is your job to do in the total scheme of things. So it sounds so simple, but it would be worth just taking a moment to reflect on how you would really want to carry your intention into the coming week or weeks of simplifying a little bit, of not doing more than your share in the total scheme of things. So just take a moment to do that.
So yeah, simplifying, and simplifying particularly as we're in Earth Care Week and all of those people focusing on mindfulness and and caring for the earth today. Keeping in mind that simplifying also is about simplifying of stuff, and what that means is just seeing when enough is enough. This is a radical subversive act to see when enough is enough. This is from an economist, Victor Lebeau, quoting. This is in the 50s about our consumer society. He says, our enormously productive economy demands that we make consumption our way of life, that we convert the buying and use of goods into rituals, that we seek our spiritual satisfaction, our ego satisfaction in consumption. We need things consumed, burned up, replaced, and discarded at an ever-accelerating rate. You can see this is not a very sustainable system, right? And yet we are hypnotized and mesmerized in thinking that more is better, sooner is best, and you can see where it's leading. And so the radical act of mindfulness, of letting go of what we discerning what we need from what we want, is summed up in the Buddhist concept of matanutta, or what's usually translated as moderation, the just enough part. And this is from P.A. Paiuto, a great Buddhist scholar and economist. He says, that moment that's just right, it's an awareness of that optimum point where enhancement of true well-being coincides with the experience of satisfaction. Consumption balanced to an amount appropriate with well-being rather than to the satisfaction of all of our desires. In contrast to maximum consumption leading to more satisfaction, we have moderate or wise consumption leading to well-being. So here we are in this predicament of learning when enough is enough and going against the grain for all the input that we find ourselves caught in that monkey trap. Oh, I need this, I need that. I've got to do this, the fear of missing something. I heard a decluttering expert that said, watch out for the word just, as in I'll just check my email, or I'll just do this along the way, because just is just feeding that, oh, this will make me feel a little bit more complete. And the same thing within simplifying our stuff. Oh, I just would like that with that. You don't really need much. So in our, particularly our simplifying, seeing it as an act of kindness and love to this planet, that here we are in North America, in the States, we're like, what, 5% of the world's population in the States consuming, what is it, 20% or 30% or more of the world's resources. It's crazy. And everybody aspires to be like that. It's not going to work. So to just see it as a spiritual act besides your own peace of mind and peace of heart, learning to let go more and more. And I've been we've been hanging around with some beautiful, inspiring people since we've been here in Canada, both in Victoria and on Salt Spring Island, where the consciousness is so beautiful. It's so moving. Oh, keep it simple. Keep it simple. Real simple. in the best sense, not with all the ads that say, oh, this will make your life simpler. And we have to, in my country, we have to figure this one out particularly, and we can all, in all of our, the first world countries, and those who've been privileged especially, seeing things in another light. And not everybody is privileged, and there's lots in our countries who don't have enough, and that distribution of wealth has created so much pain and sorrow and suffering. So just to bring more consciousness to it and feel really good about being more aligned with the sustainable way of living for the earth as well. So now I want to get to just what was brought up about the stories, because that's ultimately the true freedom in the letting go. And it's letting go of the stories of what we think either we need or are true or what happened to us. Well, this happened when I was 9 years old, and because of that, I can never, and you can fill in the blank. Yeah. Or they always do this, you know. Or why doesn't he ever do that? All of those non-provisional ways of thinking and those beliefs that says this is how it is, and every time we say that story, we're stuck in it. I was not loved, and because I was never loved, I don't know how to love, and that's why I'm not lovable, and that's why, etc., etc. Those are just stories in the mind, and what the practice shows us is looking very directly and honestly at the stories we tell ourselves and asking, is this true? Or is this just a story? So I'd like us to do a little bit of an exercise on this, and invite you to close your eyes. And this is one of the most, for me, one of the main practices, just asking, what story am I believing right now? When I get stuck, that's what it always comes down to. What story am I believing right now? So I just invite you to reflect, what story do you believe, either about yourself, about your past, about life? What story do you believe or tell yourself that keeps you from experiencing well-being and joy? See if you can quiet down and get in touch . What would it be like if you woke up and could see it as just a story? And let it go, that is, letting go of the power that it has over you, or has had over you. What would you need to understand or remember about what's true in order to let go of that power that story has over you? In your wisest perspective, what would you need to remember or understand. And just imagine what it would be like if this story less and less had its power over you. And if you saw through it eventually, it's just a story that the mind has made up and believed. Maybe it served you 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, or 5 years ago. Come into this moment. This is the start of your life. So let me ask, you don't have to get into any of the details. How many people could get in touch with a story that they tell themselves, either about themselves or about life? This is great. And the first step is just seeing it. Oh, it might be a deep-seated belief that maybe made sense to you or was based on some fact of some experience. But to see that this story has some power, it's just seeing through those beliefs. And that's one of the gifts of practice. And the first time when you start to wake up to it, it can be really difficult and humbling. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I do that to myself. But seeing it is the doorway to freedom. As Pema Chodron says, take delight in that which sees the dukkha. Take delight in the fact that you are seeing it, that you can see it. And then every time if you find yourself caught, you might just do what I suggested that I is my practice. And sometimes I do this on retreats. People come in and they see that they've been living through a story, and I'll write on a little piece of paper, I've got a remedy for you, an RX. And I say, I'm going to write something down. Every time you find yourself stuck, pull this paper out of your pocket and take a look at it. And I write, what story am I believing right now? It's a very good prescription. So, if you could remember that, you'll be kind of getting out of its power. And we can just take a few. If you want to, without getting into the story, the specifics of the story, what story do you believe that keeps you from experiencing full well-being or joy? Yes.
Are you suggesting that there is some thing to believe that's not just a story?
Is there something to believe that's not just a story? Well, we're always making up stories in our minds, so the idea is it's easier to wake up from a dream than a nightmare. And we all have our perception of reality, but if it's based on truth in this moment, it's very different than it's based on something that happened 20 years ago. Now, the thing that happened 20 years ago happened, but if you say, because that happened, this is how I am, and I can't change. Because this happened, I will always be sad. Because this happened, I can never... And you can fill in the blank. Those are the stories that I'm talking about that keeps us bound.
Yes, I understand that. What about tomorrow, believing
How do you know when you're when you hit the nugget? You keep on exploring, and there's a place in you probably that knows, and we'll be talking about hopefully by before the end of the day, listening and feeling that ring of truth, which generally is not a small-minded experience. If there's a finger wagging at you in your mind or some kind of contraction, I find generally that's not the voices that I want to listen to. But when there's this aha moment and there's an opening and it's kind and it's wise and supportive, that's more what I want to listen to and go by. But the Buddha said, we're always making, he says, don't be attached to opinions and views. That those who are, and not to let go of your opinions, not to not have opinions, but just to see, oh, those are my opinions, that's my reality, that makes sense to me, and it's just my reality. If it's a reality that supports the best coming out of you, that's probably a good one to play around with, that's what my mind is creating. It's creating a healthy story, and it can be more aligned with the truth. If it's keeping you small, then you might just play around with seeing through that. So, yes?
I just want to mention there's an excellent book called The Uncovered Soul, which really helps.
The Uncovered Soul. The Uncovered Soul. The Untethered Soul. Uh-huh. Great, thank you. We can just, if you want, we don't have to get into this, just a few stories that you might see. Yeah, well, anyone?
I'm a helpless victim.
What's that?
I'm a helpless victim.
You've got a lot of company in that one. I'm a helpless victim, yes. You can hear the pain in that, and so many people, I'm a victim, or this happened to me. Thank you. Yes.
If someone else hasn't volunteered to do that job, it's your job.
If someone else hasn't volunteered to do that job, it's your job to do that. Yes. Beautiful.
Are you talking about stories other than our childhood story? I'm imagining my, childhood trauma, and whatever, in my case, colors is the biggest story. Isn't everyone's biggest story whatever happened?
Everybody has their own story. Everybody has their own history, his story. What you do with that as it's concretized into a belief, because that happened, I am always going to be this or that way. That's where that story isn't serving you. Yes.
That, because of my understanding and a lot of this trauma is held in the physiology.
Yes.
And that, there's more work involved.
There's much, yes, thank you. Yes, okay.
And it's not just a matter of...
Thank you, yes, and what you're saying is really important. So we can know intellectually, but our bodies still can be locked in that trauma. And I think it's really important if you've been locked in a way, there's somatic experiencing, there's EMDR, and there's other modalities that help release these. And the start of it is seeing that there's a story, and there's a lot of work to be done both on a physiological level as well as a mental level. But to see, most people or many people don't aren't as aware of the subtle beliefs and how they are running that and re-traumatizing each time as you're caught up in that belief. And then there's a lot more work to do. So thank you. Yes.
I'm not good enough.
Yeah. You have a lot of company with that one. That's what we're going to be looking at next, the next step. I'm not good enough. Yes. How many people have that one? I'm not good enough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can fill in whatever the situation. Yes. Anyone else?
Something
something about me that's distasteful. Yeah. And as you hear these, you know, I hope not only can you connect or relate, but the heart opens in compassion, like, oh, yes, I hope that the mind can be freed of that, and it can help you connect with your own stories, the way we get all stuck in our stories. Yeah. Yes. Everybody has their life together except me. Yeah. Yeah. I'm self-centered and selfish.
A good mother never quits on her children.
A good mother never quits on her children. Yes.
People are apt to leave me.
People are apt to leave me. Yes. With all of these, you can hear just the universality of the way the mind gets locked into a particular belief. And what I want to just hear a few so that we can all share in this predicament of how the mind believes its stories. And I would really encourage you, if you see, if you got in touch with one for you, to keep it alive in your consciousness and holding it with great compassion and great tenderness and seeing, oh, this is the way my mind gets small. You know, I've got my own stories too, plenty of them. It's not that they stop, but you don't have to be at their mercy. You know, even the Buddha, after he's enlightened, there's a section in the Samyutta Nikaya, about 20 vignettes that are called the Mara connected discourses. And Mara comes to visit the Buddha after he's enlightened, not just before, after he's enlightened, and tries to confuse him. Like one that I love that I refer to, Mara comes and says, "You call yourself an ascetic? You're sleeping 4 hours a night. What kind of a wimp are you?" Says something like that, a little more flowery, and the Buddha says, "I see you, Mara." And with each of these vignettes, the Buddha says, "I see you, Mara," and Mara slinks away, you know, curses, foiled again. If Mara can come and visit the Buddha, cut yourself some slack, right? It's just these stories that we tell ourselves, and the first part is just waking up to them and then working on holding them with kindness, compassion, and seeing beyond them, because there's something deeper than those stories.
I would also suggest watch your look at your thinking and see if it's black or white. And if it's black or white, I'm always that kind of thing. Maybe perhaps people leave me more often than I would like, which is a little gentler than people always leave me, you know, that kind of thing. So when we can change, when we can soften our language to make it more provisional, maybe I'm not as good as I would like to be at certain things, you know, but maybe I'm good enough. I mean, it's sometimes just reversing that statement, you know, maybe I wasn't, which I wasn't the perfect mother, but maybe I was a good enough mother, maybe, which is a classic theory in therapy, you know, that kind of thing. So maybe we're good enough rather than having to be perfect, and therefore we can find all the ways that we don't live up to that perfection.
Right. So now, just before we break for lunch, we want to get to the uplifting part of letting go, okay? And that is, the beautiful expression, ultimate expression of letting go, which is the joy of generosity. That's what why the Buddha taught generosity before teaching about meditation or even morality or wisdom or anything. Generosity, it feels so good. He said, check it out, how good it feels, the joy of generosity, because it is both the expression of letting go and also the acknowledgement of interconnectedness that we share. It feels really good to share. Some people are very good at sharing, but maybe not at receiving. And I just want to put a word in for receiving, because if you're one of the kind that says, oh, it's up to me to give everybody else, you might not be so good on the receiving end. And it's just as important to learn to receive graciously as it is to give. And in the karmic exchange of giving a gift, the karmic impact of the gift depends both on three things: the purity in the heart of the one giving, the purity of the gift, and the purity in the heart of the recipient. So if you ever give something to somebody and they say, oh, you shouldn't have done it, right? Oh, you shouldn't have. Then you think, oh, maybe I shouldn't have. Yeah. But whatever, you don't feel particularly good when they say, oh, why'd you do that? Oh, you shouldn't have done that. But if somebody says, oh, thank you so much, it's like, oh, it completes the circuit and you feel really great about it. And so if you have a hard time receiving, just it's called being a field of merit for the one who's giving. When you receive graciously, you are up-leveling the karmic impact of the gift just by receiving, oh, thank you so much. So we can do a little practice.
That's one of the things we can really get into practicing as we get older, because as we get older and older, we're going to need to rely on people more and more. And if we can be generous in our appreciation rather than stuck in, oh, no, I don't want to be a burden, but at some point, probably most of us will need a lot of care. And so it's generous to be kind to those and open and affirming to those caregivers as well, and to receive graciously. So we wanted to do one more dyad exercise before lunch. And this is a simple question that first I want you to reflect on. And that is, how does generosity bring you joy? When you're generous, how does that make you happier or more, have a sense of deeper well-being or deeper connection? And it couldn't be, and obviously we think of generosity often about money, but obviously it can be about time, it can be about patience, it can be about listening. It can be about being quiet and just holding someone's hand. It can be about giving someone space to do what they need to do or be. So there's many, many forms of generosity. And we just want you to reflect on how, when you are generous, how does that bring you joy? So think of a time, one or more times, when you've been generous. One of your favorite ways to be generous. And how does that bring you joy? So take a moment to do that.